Thank you for joining me today. You have found the Third Space Podcast, and I'm your host, Bob Fabey. And today, we have Caleb Killian, the millennial. And he's here with me, the priest, and we're talking about love and the role it plays in the life of a Christian and in our culture.
What's up, Caleb?
Hello, hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. You like talking about love because you're about to get married?
Nice segue. That was good.
You like that?
Yeah, that was good.
Like that?
Me getting married.
You're getting married.
Yeah, we can talk about love. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, or we could talk about love because I've been married for a long time and talk about love. So I'm talking about the book, Not My Jesus. I opened the chapter with a quote from Amy Grant. Do you know who Amy Grant is?
Ish.
Ish. It says, they would change their tune. They would add another measure. You know, she's using musical language tunes and measure.
Right.
If they only knew this love of another kind. Love that quote. Love it. The idea is that somehow people would be transformed by the fact that there is a love that's different maybe than they would know or that they've understood. And that was certainly the case for me. I think when I kind of recognized Christ's love for me and when I started to allow him to love me the way that he wants, that it did change my tune, added another measure to my life. So I was always grateful for that that song. Super old. I think it's like, I don't know, it's probably like 82 or something. I don't know.
Bro, I wasn't even alive then.
Man, Christian music at the beginning, like when I first rededicated my life to Christ, it was pretty rough. I mean, it was pretty rough.
Wait, so is Amy Grant considered Christian music?
She is, was, and is now kind of both and.
Okay.
She married Vince Gill.
I don't know who that is.
A country singer. And did a bunch of kind of crossover type stuff. And then she's kind of done secular. And then she's done sacred. And she's, you know,
okay,
kind of done a bunch of things. But she was one of those early Christian artists who did some crossover stuff. And some people were concerned, you know.
Right.
Oh, wait, can you be a Christian and do this? Now, of course, there's all sorts of stuff going on like that. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. There's a gal named Lauren Daigle. I don't know if you've heard of Lauren Daigle. She's a Christian artist. She's pretty popular right now. She was on the Ellen show and she was all this. She was asked a question about whether she agrees with homosexual marriage or not. And she said, you know, I've got a lot of friends who are homosexual. And she says, I'm not really sure where God stands on that or where I stand on that. And the Christian world, I should say, parts of the Christian world erupted, you know, and they were like, see, she doesn't really follow Jesus. See, you know, she doesn't know. And I sat there and I actually wrote a little part about that recently in my blog. And I was like, look, I don't know when we expect musicians to be theologians, right? I'm like, hey, you know what? Lauren Daigle sings songs about her faith in Christ. And people like them. That's pretty cool. So just keep it there. Is she a theologian? I don't think so. I don't expect her to be a theologian. I don't expect all these Christian artists to have all their stuff nailed down. So
well, and the funny thing is like, isn't my perception of music is an expression of yourself as an artist and as a listener. It's an approach that they are expressing something that you can relate to.
Right.
So I guess kind of my question is if people are finding something relatable in our music that they like, it's because it's speaking to them in some way. Something right. about their life is mimicked in the lyrics that she's bringing forth. But then it comes across like, oh, well, she doesn't say what I like. And
exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. They get and I don't know if it's this, they invest into her and then they feel let down when something
put
like
her
that
on a pedestal.
Yeah. It seems wrong. I mean, music to me is supposed to be this expression that you can try and relate to.
If you think about it, I think it's a microcosm of what's happened in our culture anyways, where if you find out something about somebody and you don't agree with that thing, then all of a sudden they're the worst people in the world.
Because of that one thing.
Because of that one thing. And I'm like, what the? So I like Lauren Daigle. I like her music. It speaks to me. That's really great. Does she believe everything that I believe the way that I believe it? I have no idea.
Right.
But I'm certainly not going to get weird about it and go, oh, Lauren Daigle, blah, blah. You know, I'm just like, what are you doing? Because if you take a look, if you take a look at whatever the cultural thing is that you have put on a pedestal, it's only going to take a couple layers down to find out that you won't agree with them, or that they're doing something you don't like, or that you find reprehensible, and you're going to be in a relationship with no one. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, you know, the Christians were saying, hey, you know, we're not going to Target. You know, I don't feel safe at Target because, you know, there could be men in the women's bathroom or women in the men's, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, so you're not going to go to Target for that, but you will go to Starbucks. Okay, well, ask questions about Starbucks, what Starbucks supports. Oh, you use Verizon? Ask questions about Verizon. Oh, you like iPhones? Ask questions about Mac. Like, you're never going to end.
Oh, yeah.
It's never going to end. That's insanity.
Well, and it, I guess one of the things that I struggle with that whole premise is just, especially take the music front. We talked about it. You find an artist that you like and you listen to.
Yep.
And then you find out, oh, maybe they don't have similar views, similar opinions that I maybe do, but I still like their music.
Right.
Is it better to actually like look at that and get mad at it? Or is it better to actually look at that and say, hey, let's dig into that. They believe this, I believe this, but we still have this common point of the music, the lyric, the word.
Right.
Is there a changing of my opinion? Get like dig deeper into yourself in those moments.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like learn more about yourself.
Sure.
And try and discover, one, why you're sticking so steadfast to whatever that view is, which is still okay. Or maybe there's an opposing view that can make you think 5% different.
Yeah.
You know? But that type of, I guess, just being able to go back and forth and really not have this, like, hard, fast, you know, stake in the ground on these issues.
Right.
But really be open to many viewpoints, you know, you have your viewpoint. Don't run away from that.
Right.
Everybody needs to have a viewpoint. I agree with that, but that doesn't need to be the staple of anger. That needs to be the staple of conversation.
Right. Well, and I think that speaks directly to probably if not the biggest point that I'm trying to make in this book, Not My Jesus. It's the sacred role that God has given us as Christians is to love him, to love each other, and to love our enemy.
Yeah.
That's our sacred role. It's a God-given, treasured, precious role that he's asked us to play. And it drives me batty when I don't do it, but when I also see those who say, hey, you know, we're Christians, and then they just come out with venom. Mm-hmm. And I think, wait, time out. Wait, what do you think your job is? Right? So if Jesus is judge, okay, we've established that, right? This guy is the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning, the end, the first and the last. He's the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. He's got that handled.
Yeah. Right?
And I think Christians get it messed up where they say, wait a minute, I'm going to judge. Jesus can love. And it's like, no, Jesus said, you love, I'll judge.
Yep.
And it's totally twisted. And so that was a huge part of why I wrote the book, was because I thought, hey, people are getting this whole thing sideways. I just see Christians getting angry and getting caught up in the cultural kind of weirdnesses and really losing sight about what it is that God's asked us to do and who he's asked us to be. And that, like the Amy Grant stuff way back in the day, but even, you know, like the Lauren Daigle stuff, you know, it's like, wait, what do you think your job is? You know, If your job is to combat the culture, to fight back against what you think is not Christian, okay, but it better be dripping with love, like saturated with love.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see a lot of that.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever had the experience of someone kind of belittling that whole notion? You said, you know, love your friends, love your neighbors, love your enemy type of thing, right?
Yep.
So there's this kind of interesting, I guess, stigma or stereotype that they've kind of placed on that kind of mentality within the Christian culture, right? And it's been this approach of like, oh yeah, you just, you know, go around and you just love everybody because that's just so easy and you're just love. And it's like, can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
Because it's just, people don't understand how functionally hard it is to do that sometimes.
Right.
Now, yeah, I get it. It sounds maybe a little hoity-toity and in all of that in the wording, but think about that.
Right.
Love your friends, love your
love God.
Neighbor, love God.
Love your neighbor.
Love your enemy.
Love your enemy. Yeah.
Okay. That's a tall task. First of all, I get tired just trying to make sure that the love I express towards my family, my friends, those I have good relationships with, that's a full-time job in itself.
Right.
Making sure you have healthy relationships. That's a full-time job in itself.
Right.
And then God is asking, no, go further than that. Love the people around you. Love the interactions that you have, good or bad. Love people that you have disagreements with.
Right.
Love people who you hate dearly.
Right.
You know, and it's like, that's a very like contradicting idea to me,
yep.
You know, and as humans, I don't think we're built to be able to functionally take that on.
Right.
And so it does take God to really make that happen.
Right.
But it's not easy. You
no.
know, it's not this hoity toity. Like that is sometimes the absolute like life draining, energy crushing type of activity that you have to take on because you're investing so much into that,
right?
Into something you struggle with.
Yep.
You know, and yeah,
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, I get it. And when it, you know, in certain circles, you know, if I ask that question or I make a statement around that, you know, it can be, well, you know, you just want to, you know, excuse behavior, or you just want to let people get off the hook, or you just want, and it's like, well, I kind of do. I want to love them. I don't know what that looks like. I don't always know the best way to do it. I'm not always clear. I just know that's my job. That is my God-given sacred role, is that I'm supposed to be the love in the culture and in the family and things. So when I think about this, that's why I kind of pulled it apart a little bit. I said, okay, there's in this chapter in the book, you know, I talk about four different types of love, okay? Because we're not always clear, and the way that our culture talks about love gets sideways really fast, right? You know, I love chicken wings.
Oh, yeah.
I love chicken wings. Now, what does that mean, actually? Can I say that I love chicken wings? And it's like, well, you might, but that could be really weird. Because there's different types of love. So I wanted to just talk about these really quick. Webster Dictionary, Merriam-Webster, okay, describes love this way. They said, a strong affection for another arising out of kinship or personal ties, material love for a child, maternal love for a child, attraction based on sexual desire, affection, tenderness felt by lovers, i.e. after all these years, they're still very much in love. Three, affection based on admiration, benevolence, or common interests, i.e. love for his old schoolmates. And this is Merriam-Webster, but in the New Testament, there's four words. So when you say love, it could mean a lot of different things. First one is eros, which is where we get the term erotic, right? And mm-hmm. And that's sexual love. Like we're talking about sex, intimacy, that kind of thing. So when I talk about chicken wings, I'm not describing that kind of love. Plain and simple.
That's a weird picture.
So I quoted Calvin Klein in the book, and it talks about using sex to sell. And it says, not only does sex sell well, it wears well, it smells good, and it sleeps soundly. According to Bradley Johnson, writing for Adage in 2015, the top 200 national leading advertisers spent $137.8 billion. Okay. $137.8 billion spent trying to figure out how consumers think, act, walk, talk, and make purchases so they can get money from us, right? Well, they use sex. Not all of them, but many of them use sex to sell their products. Why? Because sex sells.
Yep.
Plain and simple.
Yep.
So it's just like, okay, well, that's a type of love. It's a type of thing. Absolutely. Now, is that the same kind of love that we're used, that we're called to use toward our enemies? No. It's a specific place, right? So we don't get it twisted when we say love our enemies. And then there's phileo, which is brotherly love. And that if you have a brother and you have a good relationship, hopefully that's the kind of relationship you have there. But it's the kind of thing that says, I got your back no matter what, because I love you. And if you call at midnight, I'll be there at 2 a.m. Why? Because I love you. I got your back. Even if you're screwing up, I got you. Right? It's that kind of right. It's that kind of love. Now, are we called to have that kind of love for our neighbors and our enemies? I think in part I do. And I talk about storge, which is like familial love, and that love within families looks a little weird. Because I remember seeing a family kiss on the lips, you know, like, oh, okay, see you later. And they kissed on the lips. And I was like, what was that? You know, and if you're listening and your family kisses on the lips, just know that I'm quietly judging all of you. But it's more just like, wow, we didn't do that. What did we do? We kissed on the head or the cheek or whatever, but we didn't care. Well, I don't care. That's just family, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no weirdness there. It's just your family does it that way, but you're expressing the love that you have within the family. And so there's familial bonds of love that people have. And I think, could we be discussing that when it comes to loving your enemy and loving your neighbor? And I think there's aspects to thinking of them like family that I think would be beneficial for us. Only in part, you know, not the whole thing, but in part saying, hey, look, what would change if I looked at this person around me like they were actually family?
Right.
Oof, and that's deeply challenging. So then we get to agape, which is in Christianese, most Christians are fairly familiar with what that looks like. And it's the kind of love that's sacrificial love. It's the kind of love that is described as Jesus having for us, and that God has for us, that God has for the world, that kind of love where he's saying, you know what? I am seeking your best interest because I love you. And so it's, in some ways, it kind of combines the other types of love. And that when we orient to the world, that's supposed to be our orientation. Not, hey, I'm going to judge you. You know?
Totally.
Not trying to make you somebody you're not, but that I'm going to love you. And that's the role that God's asked me to play. And I find it enormously challenging. I mean, I don't have this figured out. I just know that's the direction that I think that Christians are supposed to be pointed. And when I hear arguments over politics or all, you know, the venom spewed anywhere, I just think, ugh, that's not, I don't think we're supposed to be leading with this, people, you know? I think we're supposed to be leading with love and then figure out how that works.
Yeah. One of the kind of interesting facts that I guess I'm still kind of grappling with, when I read this book the first time, I thought about it in a very segmented type of situation with the four types of love. Uh-huh. oh, well, in this situation, it's this type of love. In that situation, it's this other type of love. You know, you have these kind of characteristics that falls under it. And I did think agape love was kind of maybe a little bit more of a culmination of all of that. Uh-huh. But I did, you know, for a while, I like tried to kind of, you know, think about this and crunch on it and orient to it. And what was funny is I read through it, you know, again, and I almost find it's situationally based. Uh-huh. It's something that you can, look at something and you can hit a point on the spectrum of a lot of that, you know, mm-hmm. types of love and the way that you orient towards people. Cause I think about, you know, I'm getting married yep. and I've been thinking a lot about, all right, the guys I want to have up on the altar with me. I have, you know, I've been blessed with a good amount of friends. I have a core set of guys that I have, you know, good relationships with and I feel close to, and yeah. they've kind of brought value and stuff to the relationship that we've had. But like reading through this has been really interesting because there's moments in my life where I orient more towards the brotherly love. Hey, we're brothers, man. Right. This is, but there's also moments where it's like, you are my family.
Right.
You are like someone I would take a bullet for. You are, right. you know? And so it's not this idea of necessarily your relationship has to fall under one of those categories, mm-hmm. but more so, your relationship can be built out of these kind of four pillars, you know, of yeah. love. And, you know, you can run to little different sections, if you want to say it that way, as to how you orient to certain situations. But, yeah, it's been really interesting to try and crunch on that to bring that to life more and really understand, the nature in which the way I try and love people comes from and why I orient the way I do when right. I try and approach those relationships that way.
Yeah. You know, and I think maybe the way that we could be thinking about it is to say it's agape expressed as.
Sure.
So it's agape expressed as phileo, you know? So, you know, and technically you'd say, well, that's love expressed as love. Well, on one level, yes, but it's more like, I love you and it's expressing itself this way. And I love you and it's maybe, and so that it does look different at different times, you know? And I think that's a healthy way to think about it so that we're not, compartmentalized in a way that, you know, you were saying you don't orient that way. And I think that's true. And I think if we could say, look, my primary orientation to the world is love, is agape. I want what's best for everybody. You know, the cashier at the gas station, I don't really care who it is, but that would be the primary thing, right? I believe, naively, okay, but that this world would look fundamentally different if people who say they're Christians actually worked hard in creative ways at trying to practice this thing. I think it would look completely different.
Oh, amen. I had one example that I love to use. I laugh. I have a buddy from a man I've known from since middle school and love him dearly, been a Christian brother and been kind of my accountable person in my life for a long time. One of the things that I've always loved about him is he's always had this way of expressing. He's kind of this very like exuberant, just like, I don't know, big spirited character. Uh-huh. You know, he's always had this big personality, you know? And so the way that he always approaches people is just so inviting and just so infectious to yeah. some degree.
Yeah.
But the thing that I always saw him do that was just kind of the next level of that is, yeah, open the door for someone, but open the door and say hello. Say, how's your day going?
Right.
Say thank you. Say please. Right. Making sure those interactions with every person that you have are just that next level of something deeper
yep.
to show a deeper style of love, a more godly character of love. And he was so good. But what was so funny about that is over time, I've seen this from him over time. My friends would look at me and be like, wow, you kind of look like Tyler. You know, you're that was kind of something I've seen Tyler do. And you're kind of taking on that character. And it's almost when you experience that and you see it consistently that it becomes infectious to you. And then you then do it. And I was like, man, if that were the case in the world where more and more people saw it and it became infectious, they did it and it was able to grow and grow, like what a different world we would be looking at.
Yeah. I mean, that whole, you know, pay it forward, pass it on kind of idea, you know, for sure. I think when it comes to Christians, I guess the conclusion that I've drawn is that we are really, really bad at allowing God to love us and to experience and to marinate in the fact that we are just cherished. And because we don't do that well, that we don't reflect him well. You know, it's not, I don't think it's about us just mustering up enough, you know, trying to work hard enough or trying to be enough or get better at something, but it's more like fundamentally we actually believe that God, his disposition towards us is joy and that it's love and that we're completely accepted. I don't think Christians get that because it appears, and I could be wrong, but that many act out of a place that looks like that's not true. So the question I would ask is like, hey, if you knew that you were perfectly loved and you knew you were perfectly accepted, if you knew that God was perfectly pleased with you, how would you view your life differently? How would you view other people differently? And I think that that's tragic, right? I mean, because we say, hey, look, we believe in Jesus, we say he is who he is, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. He's forgiven, you know, all of the things that Christians say about themselves and their relationship with Christ. It just doesn't appear like we act out of that place enough.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, the thing that I kind of have thought a lot about is people reciprocate what they know, you know, and it's hard to change your behavior when it's ingrained in you, you know, and I know lots of individuals who have grown up in households where there was that more stoic father figure who doesn't say I love you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know lots of households where, you know, love was not a huge character in the household, honestly.
Right.
And maybe there's a understanding that yes, we love each other, but it's not said, it's not expressed. And so you reciprocate that is what you know. If you don't know anything else, then it's not going to come to light. And I think that's the biggest key for us as humans. God is in a way that he can show love. I mean, God is love.
Right.
I think that's the key thing that I always forget sometimes is God is love.
Yeah.
Like it's not God does love or shows love or
his characteristic is very, his nature.
Yes. The nature of him is love. And right. I mean, the thing that I've always kind of related to that is the idea of just that father figure, you know, God is the father.
Right.
And everybody, well, you know, he, you know, tells you do bad things and all that stuff, but it's out of love. My dad, multiple times in my life, told me that I did bad things or something I was doing was bad. It wasn't to tell me that he didn't love me or that I was a bad person, but it was actually the exact opposite. It's because he loved me and he wanted the most for me that he told me those things. Right. And I think God does the same things. And so it's like, God is love, but I don't think have that depth. And so if we are not at a point where we can show and express and be better at putting love into the world, to make it visible, to make it intelligible, tangible, then I don't think people will really know. It can be assumed. It can be kind of, you know, a bubbly little thing, but it's not going to be the deep, meaningful love that I think God wants us to dive into.
Right. Yeah, I agree. There's a few things. One, I do think that most people paint a picture of God in the way that they've been loved. So you love the way you've been loved kind of idea. Right. Right. And I think that's true, in a lot of circumstances, which I think makes it even more critical for us to practice allowing God to love us, to really let the truth of what he has to say about who we are to wash over us over and over and over, to combat, right? To combat the things that we think and feel, some of our experiences, all of those things, you know, where we would carry around a bunch of shame and guilt, and God is like, what are you doing? That's not who you are. That's not how I think about you. Why don't you agree with me about that thing? And I think that that would be a fundamental shift then when I look at those around me, to be able to say, I don't agree with you. I mean, maybe I don't even like you. But my primary disposition towards you is going to be love. And I can work through some of that stuff. But that I start with love. I don't start with, finger pointing or name calling or whatever the thing might be. And I think, you know, I've studied other, you know, world religions, and I know there's people who say, hey, you know, they're all basically the same, which is for me really sloppy thinking. I couldn't agree less. And so when it comes to Christian thinking, Christian practice, I believe that this is like a God-given thing where Jesus was really clear, like, hey, this is what I want you to do, you know? And the degree to which we allow God to love us is the degree to which we will love our enemy. And it's the degree to which people will know who he is. There's an old saying, hey, Christians, they will know we are Christians by our harsh judgments. Or no, they will know we are Christians by our love. They'll know we are Christians by our political stance. No, they will know we are Christians by our love. It's an old saying, but I really value it. That's the primary way that people would hear, understand. You know, I mean, early Christians were known for being people who would rescue babies from exposure. I don't know if you're familiar with that practice, but ancient times, if you had a child and it had a defect, you would literally just set it on a garbage pile. And just take it out by the city and just leave it.
Right.
You know? Early Christians had a practice of rescuing those children. It was like, hey, that child's valuable. These babies are precious. Let's take care of them, you know? Hospitality was a thing, you know? Like, of course, let's be hospitable. Why? Because God's been hospitable to us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so the fundamental change, I think, is critical. And I think that's so much about this book for me, is that I desperately want Christians, myself included, to learn how to allow God to love them deeply and meaningfully and transformationally, so that we might actually reflect him. That sacred role that he's given us, we would actually play out in the world, so that those who are hurting might find a place within Christianity and within Christians of healing. You know, those who are disenfranchised, those who have been marginalized, those who maybe got burnt out trying to run the rat race or whatever, that they find a place of love where it's like, hey, I'm going to go to the Christians because they're the ones. And I want to be known that way, you know? And I think if we can do that, if we can work harder at that and really try to practice that thing, that there will be a shift in our culture. That I think that's the way to fight the culture. You know, I think that's the way to interact with those around us, that it's like, man, this was his idea. It's not somebody else's idea. This was Jesus' idea. Go do this thing. I'll take care of it. I got the rest. You do this. Mm-hmm. And I think if we take that seriously, it's not just flabby Christianity where it's like, oh, I'm just going to leave. I'm just going to love everybody. Let Jesus do, you know, blah, blah. It's not that. It's a deep, deep engagement and a deep challenge for us to allow God to do what he wants to do in us and then practice what he says through us.
Well, and I think for me, one of the key points that you brought up was the transformation.
Yeah.
That for me is so crucial. You know, I've been living by kind of a motto. I mean, I guess I've always lived by this, but I've tried to make it part of my vocabulary and something, you know, the past probably 6 months. And it's more this idea of just when we leave this earth, our political views don't matter.
Right.
Our stance in life, our power, our prestige, our life as we know it ends.
Yeah.
It leaves. But what is lasting is the love and relationships that you had with the people around you.
Oh.
That is what you're going to be remembered for. You know, I lost my grandfather a year ago.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the little things, his political stances, his ideas on life and things like that. But I do remember how much he loved me. Yeah. And loved his family and expressed that fervently.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the conversations and the relationship building that he valued so much. He was an avid smoker. So my grandma hated it. So he had this thing. He was like, we had to go out on the back porch so that he could smoke.
Right.
But he was so insistent as a kid for me to come out and sit on the porch and talk and commune with him and just have that relationship. And that's hard as a kid. Like as a kid, I just want to go play. I want to go run around. I want to do that. I cherish that so deeply now.
Right.
You know, and I understand that on another level now that he's gone. I mean, unfortunately, that's where it comes from. But it's like, I don't want to lose that opportunity to build a relationship, to love people and let them know that I love them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I guess that's always my conversation when it comes to, you know, do you believe, do you not believe? And my question is not around that. It's like, do you love?
Right.
Whether you follow Christ or not, it's like the love and relationship that you have with people is so important.
Yeah.
It's so important. And I pray that God can, from that conversation, show that like, hey, it's my love that's creating this lifestyle of a healthy, fruitful relationship with people.
It's going to transform things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just, yeah, it's a transformation, being open to transformation and an understanding that like all of this stuff, the political stuff, the nature of society and all of that stuff, it is inherently meaningless.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
Because when you leave, that stays here.
Right.
But the love that you have for people can grow and it can be a seed for something bigger for generations to come. That is truly life changing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, other people have used the term legacy, you know, like what's going to be left in your wake, you know, and on some level, you know, it's funny, funerals, they just say, oh, you know, they talk about the good times, you know, they forget about the bad, you know, it's like after a baby's born, it's easy to forget about the pain because now you have the baby, you know? And so when people have loss, sometimes they orient to that as well. And so I think we can forget a lot of the things. We just go, oh yeah, they were loving, or oh, they were a good guy, or oh yeah, you know, those kinds of things. And we do leave awake, you know? And I would hope and pray that if we say yes to Christ and we say yes to being his people, or his, you know, saying I'm a Christ follower, that then we would immerse ourselves in the love of God, meaning that we can't help but leak the love that he has for us out on those around us, and that would be the way that we live our lives, that just allow God to pour in and out on all of us and the love that he has, so that then we might actually spill on those around us instead of being fearful, you know, and kind of, you know, quick to judge and all of the things that I'm afraid that Christians are known for more so in our culture. That's really kind of, I guess, in many ways why I wrote the book, you know, is to try to get our heads back around that, you know, and see if maybe, you know, we can't make a little bit of a difference by actually being who Christ asked us to be, you know, and trying to do what he asked us to do. So any final thoughts, Caleb, about that?
No, I think I'm good, man. It's a great conversation.
Yeah, it's fun.
I think the arguments and the stuff that you bring up in the book is really meaningful, you know, and I just challenge one, our readers and listeners, and, you know, I am not a reader. Yeah. This was actually one of two books that I read in 2018. That's good.
Forced reading.
Yep. Forced reading. But, it was really great. And it's a challenging book. It makes you think deeper and really kind of get inside yourself and really kind of solidify, like, man, am I believing what I believe and what God wants me to believe, or am I letting the world around me influence me sometimes?
Sure.
And yeah, there was times where I was like, yeah, I'm solid on this. I feel good about this. But there was times, there were subjects, there were things that I had to go back and kind of check my heart on and really rethink about. So yeah, I encourage the conversations. I hope this sparks conversations for others.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. Yeah. Well, I'm grateful, you know, for the time I had to spend. And as always, I'm grateful for you listening to this podcast. Yeah, you can always find me at bobfabie.com. You can actually click on the link and buy the book from Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. There on my website, you can also find a form where you can ask me to come and speak about this book or other topics such as dignity. Has been a thing that I've been working on, and actually I'm going to be speaking on male toxicity, the toxic male syndrome. I'm kind of excited about taking a look at that from a Christian perspective. I'll be speaking about that in March in just outside of St. Louis. I'm looking forward to that. You can also find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And as always, many, many blessings to you. Thanks for listening.